ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $14.99 per month, that's Downpour.com. On this episode, Grammy winner Miss Amy talks about her new project, while Grammy hopeful Matthew Shell explodes on the scene with Arun Shenoy and other guests on his album Victorious. And we all love Saturday Night Live and 30 Rock. We'll feature Tina Fey's audiobook Bossy Pants right after the news you want to know.
As I stand on the floor of the boat of this car on the road, got this woman in the back seat. See my wifey in the middle of delivery. Man, she saved me till this day, I don't know why. She picked me up when I was down on the road with the wind and the cold, where the sun gonna rise in a mile. In a mile, you'll be feeling fine.
Hello, I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
And I'm Jerry Renfro. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. There's a new website that just started up. It's called Rap Genius. Well, it's not really new. It started in 2009 as the Hip Hop Wikipedia, but has since expanded, and now it's called Rap Genius. And it essentially allows you to go to their website and search for lyrics to songs and get explanations behind
it. Hey, Jerry, I wanted to see interrupt you just for a second there. You know what? Because you had mentioned earlier about, you know, in the, when Cyrus's story on the Lone Ranger about the internet and everything like that.
Right.
Well, that was a perfect example of the internet, because you were talking about this new site, which actually is very cool. I've seen it. But you go, well, it's not really new. It's been around since 2009. So like 4 years. It's been
around well, 4 years. Well, in the internet age, that's a lifetime.
Man, it's been around for 4 years,
that
man.
That's ancient.
Yeah.
Well, look at how much Facebook has permeated our culture. It's only been around for 7-8 years now.
Oh, okay.
I mean, and yet you have an entire generation that can't imagine a life without Facebook.
I love Betty White's line, you know, that about Facebook when, you know, they put her on Saturday Night Live. And she was the, somebody started a Facebook campaign to have her host Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And she said, I never heard of Facebook. She didn't do it. When she hosted the show, she said, I never heard of Facebook. And she goes, we never have Facebook. She goes, in my day, we had a phone book, but didn't have pictures in it.
That sounds like Betty.
So tell us about this ancient company, Rap Genius.
This amazingly ancient four-year-old company, Rap Genius. So Rap Genius is a site filled with the lyrics of more than 1 million songs. So it's not just rap now. In fact, it started with artists like T.I., Nas, Nicki Minaj, and Kanye West. And now all the way to Justin Timberlake, One Direction, Lady Gaga, and Justin Bieber. What you could do is you can go to the website and you can search by the song or lyrics, and you can look at the lyrics and it will actually tell you things about them. So, for example, Hotel California, classic Eagles hit. On a dark desert highway, cool wind in my hair, warm smell of Kalitas rising up through the air. So when you click on that in Rap Genius, it lets you know that a Kalita is literally a little tail in Spanish. But in this particular context, it means sweet, sweet marijuana.
Did you know that, Cyrus?
I did not know that.
I did not know that either, and I usually know everything. Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven includes annotations that reference the Bible, Shakespeare, and Lord of the Rings.
Man, those guys are deep.
Led Zeppelin. Well, they are very deep, actually. So it's not just musical lyrics now. It's actually a lot of things like The Great Gatsby, the Bible, poetry, even news stories are being annotated. They recently, Mark Andreessen invested $15 million in the site, and another capital investment firm invested $1.9 million. But currently the site is completely free and has no ads. So it's not generating any revenue yet. And the founder of the company said it will, but he's kind of taking a wait and see attitude and just wanting us to be patient.
Well, yeah, you know, Facebook didn't have ads in the beginning.
Nope, it certainly didn't.
But how is the information verified? Like, I mean,
it started as the hip hop Wikipedia. So I'm assuming it runs just like Wikipedia does, which it says that too, that anybody can do it. In fact, right. Like one of the registered users is Facebook's COO, Sheryl Sandberg. She's listed as a verified artist and she's made annotations. Mark Andreessen, the guy who invested in it, same thing. He put up a memo from Yahoo CEO Marissa Mayer, a letter to shareholders from Warren Buffett, and the resignation letter from the former CEO of Groupon, Andrew Mason. So it's like a public thing.
I mean, lyrics are like poetry, and they could mean a lot of things to a lot of people. I think
what they're doing, Christy, is they're giving you the literal translation.
Yeah,
okay. Literal translation, not what it means to you, or not what you can interpret it as, but what the literal translation means.
And I think some of it's contextual too. You know, it's like when Hotel California was written, this particular word meant this. You know,
I'll tell you what. You know, what's fascinating about this story is that this Andre Horowitz, whatever his name is, the guy who. He invested $15 million in the company.
Oh, that's Mark Andreessen.
Mark Andreessen. Okay, yeah, Mark. This guy, he's also the same dude. He had 2% of Skype.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Skype was sold to Microsoft for $8.5 billion. So I'm like, dang, man.
Yep, and he was also an early investor in Facebook. He has interest right now in Twitter, Pinterest, and Fab.
Well, if he has an interest in GitHub, I mean, I'll say it, then you'll have something going.
We will welcome him with open arms.
Yeah, I had fun looking through it, and Talking Heads is one of my favorite bands, and I was like, I wonder if they're going to have any of their songs, and
I checked it out.
Yeah, and they did, and interesting little
factoid. So what does burning down the house mean?
Yeah, well, check it out, and I didn't look at that song, but I'd be curious to know what they have to say.
I think it means setting your house on fire. I'm just going out on a limb, just saying, could be.
Jerry, you're crazy.
I know, it's crazy talk, but you know, musicians are interesting folk. I kind of agree with you in that, you know, it is like modern day poetry, and how do you say for sure that this means, but at least it gives you a basis to start from.
Well, I mean, guess, I'm just
curious,
man. There's
so many rumors about these things, you know, like, oh, this is what they were talking about. No, man, it was this.
So what does so I'm an ordinary rumor. Guy burning down the
yeah,
house
actually,
mean?
You know, that is so funny, because now that I think about it, I think I did look at burning down the house, and I think it was, it said that David Byrne tried a number of other lyrics in it.
Uh-huh.
I could be wrong,
and that's
but I
what
think
fit.
And that's what fit like the chorus.
So it means
well,
that
you know
it
what? I will
scale.
Tell you, I did look up one song on this, and it was from Joan Jett. And she, you know, the I Love Rock and Roll Girl, you know, from The Runaways,
yep.
Joan Jett, the Blackhearts. But her song, I Hate Myself for Loving You, right?
Yeah.
A very effective song. I Hate Myself for Loving You. Okay, the song when she wrote it, the song was I Hate Myself for Not Being Able to Get Clean. She was a drug addict at the time, and her producer told her to change the lyric to Loving You.
So talking about the drugs.
Talking about the drugs.
Interesting.
Oh.
And so it puts a whole new spin on the whole song, because, like, you know, I used to think it was like a cool breakup song or something like that. And now I'm thinking like, oh, okay. All right.
The hidden meaning.
Next, somebody's going to tell me Santa Claus is, you know, does not exist, which will really blow my mind.
Charlie, I hate to tell you this, but...
Don't tell him. Don't tell him.
Oh, come on, dude.
Santa's real. You heard it here first.
I got my list, man. I'm already making my list already. It'll never be too early.
We'll make sure to check it twice.
Huh. Another band that would probably have some songs on here that people would want to look up, The Doors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they're known for poetry and music. Well, recently, Ray Manzarek passed away. God bless him. And the two remaining survivors of The Doors are planning to put together a tribute concert for him. Robbie Krieger announced this to Rolling Stone magazine recently, saying, you know, we're going to do this one show for Ray and have a big send-off, and that's either going to start or end it, meaning... you know, Robbie Krieger and John Densmore's reunion because of a serious rift that happened back in 2002 when Ray Manzarek and Robbie Krieger started touring together. John Densmore got upset about them using the name in their band name and sued them. And so they sued him back. And what Krieger explained was something that their lawyers came up with, you know, to drop the suit. You know, one person sues you, you sue the other person back, and then you hope everybody just drops it out of court.
Yeah, it's the American way.
It's the American way.
Yeah, you play the sue me, sue you blues.
Yeah, exactly.
Affidavit signing time, sign on the dotted line.
Huh. Well, that's the subject of John Densmore's new book, The Doors Unhinged, which is out. And, you know, it goes into all that, you know, courtroom drama between the two. But, you know, they're trying to move on. They're going to put together this Ray Manzarek tribute and maybe release some albums from the past. So
that
would
be great.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's amazing that band has such staying power, you know?
Yeah, considering how long ago Jim passed, you know, and they're still rocking.
They still are.
Yeah.
I saw his, I went to, when I was in Paris, I saw his grave, Jim Morrison's grave.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just saw a thing the other day that showed like his room at that hotel that he was living at. And they've kept it the way it was. And it's still covered with like doodles he did on the wall and things like that.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was really neat.
Yeah, it was interesting. You go walk into the cemetery and there's like, I was saying to my friend, like, gee, I hope we can find it. Of course, there's like a million, like everybody, like, you know, with spray paint, like, Jim, this way with all these arrows.
So you didn't have a problem locating it.
No, we had no problem finding it.
They took him out of there. He's not even there anymore, but the cemetery and the plot is still a tourist destination.
Isn't that
amazing? He's not there? They exhumed him?
They exhumed him.
Where is he now? They
brought him back to Los Angeles.
Yeah, I think he's at that, like, Woodland Hills or something like that.
Yeah, well, they don't want to tell anybody because they don't want the same thing to happen.
Happen there, yeah.
That's like why. That's the whole reason Bruce why they Lee's. Took him out of there. Because
it was the number two tourist attraction in France.
Really? So it's like Eiffel Tower, Jim Morrison's grave.
Exactly. And it was such problematic for the French government.
Oh, I'm sure.
And the Morrison family wanted Jim Morrison to be buried in Los Angeles because that was his
makes
home.
Makes sense.
So he's now, you know, on the 5 freeway, I think. And
under the 5 freeway.
Yeah, he's on Hollywood and Vine.
Right, you know? With Jimmy Hoffa or something.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you ever want to break on through to the other side, man, just go down, you know, the Slauson cut off.
You know, you just, like, get on the PCH and, like, go north, like, two blocks, right? And then you can get off on the 101 into the 47, and you're there.
Right.
We're
for
Californians.
Sure.
Stuart.
Yeah. Stuart, what are you doing here? Oh, my God.
Oh,
I love
God.
That show.
Well, Los Angeles' own superstar, Lindsay Lohan, is hanging out in a rehab facility at the moment. But when she gets out, which is going to be at the end of July, she's going to do a big exclusive interview with Oprah Winfrey.
Of course.
Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, really?
Yeah. So exciting. I can't wait to find out what she's doing, how rehab was. OWN, which is Oprah's network, will air an exclusive 8-part interview with Lindsay Lohan. And it's going to be in 2014. Lindsay Lohan, who is 27 and, as we all know, has kind of screwed things up a little bit with drugs and problems with accidents, driving accidents.
To say the least, yeah.
Not the best driver, yes.
Not the best driver. I don't know. Why is she driving? She's so much money. Just get a driver. Anyway,
good point.
She's been offered a lot of sort of interview things and scoops, but Oprah is reportedly shelling out $2 million for this conversation. So I guess the lesson here is it kind of doesn't matter for Lindsay how much she screws up her life. Mm-hmm. You know, you come out of rehab and $2 million is going to go into your bank account. So that's pretty good. I guess being a drug addict and getting arrested is kind of a lucrative job for her because acting isn't working. So
you know what, really, you know, we talked about her before, but you know, it's really kind of a shame because she is a good actress.
Yeah, she's really good.
She has so much talent.
Yeah. She's so beautiful. She's so, I mean, there's so much there, and you know, it's just, well, you're just talking about Joan Jett. I hate myself for loving you and the drugs. I
right?
mean, maybe Lindsay needs to, you know, have that song on, like,
she could do a remake.
Yeah,
replay.
You know, she does fancy herself a singer, so.
Yeah, it seems like a perfect fit.
Yeah, I don't know. Poor thing. So anyway, so she's going to do this in 8-episode docudrama on Lindsay Lohan. So, haven't heard about her enough, then you can get it straight from the horse's mouth.
Well, you know, it's about time we got an update on Lindsay because, you know, I'm telling you, man, you know, Lindsay is a crack up, man. It's like, you know, she's coming out and she's going to share her experience, and I'm sure it's going to be heartfelt. But it's hard to, you know, take it seriously because she is an actress. So, you know.
Right. So how much can you actually believe? You know,
she can pretty much play any part.
She's a good actress.
She is a good actress. And
it could just be a docudrama.
Right. And you could, who's a bigger diva, Lindsay Lohan or Oprah Winfrey? I mean, you got both in the same room.
They probably have to expand the roof in there to handle both those.
Lindsay's going
to
be going, well, I was in rehab and I was doing this, and I can hear Oprah going, oh, child, you don't have no idea.
You have no
this.
Idea.
Hey, Oprah can be humble.
Hopefully they'll get along. You know, I mean, oftentimes, not often, but sometimes, even people in the same business, big celebrities, they just because they're in the same business, that doesn't mean that they get along. And I'll tell you, nowhere was that more apparent recently than going back to Jay-Z, who we talked about before. Jay-Z was doing an interview with the Breakfast Club morning show in New York, Power 105.1, and the conversation became a little awkward when Robert De Niro's name was brought up. Everybody loves De Niro, right?
Yeah, everyone loves him.
Apparently not. The Magna Carta Holy Grail rapper was asked about...
I hear you laughing, Chrissy. That
thing is so awkward.
Say that again, Jerry.
The Magna Carta Holy Grail.
The Magna Carta Holy Grail.
What a title, I'm telling you.
Oh, my
Picasso.
God.
The reason De Niro was brought up was because apparently De Niro had been trying to reach out to Jay-Z, and they asked if he had gotten back to the Godfather 2 actor, and Jay-Z said, no, I haven't. And I guess last November, the New York Post reported that De Niro had confronted Jay-Z for not calling him back after 6 attempts to make contact. Jay-Z basically said, I treat people based on who they are, who they really are, like not the name, not Robert De Niro, who you are as a person.
What did Robert De Niro do to him?
I don't know. Robert De Niro tried to reach out to him. According to the Post, De Niro had been trying to get a hold of Jay-Z regarding a song he had agreed to make for the Tribeca Film Festival. You know, the festival that De Niro hosts every year in New York. They ran into each other at Leonardo DiCaprio's birthday, because of course you run into everybody there.
I didn't see them there. But you know what? Not a lot of them came back. You know, to the dish room, which is where I was.
Right, exactly, right. Yeah, from my busboy station, I didn't see him either. Yeah. It was crazy. So Jay-Z had said that he would make
that could have been him, Jerry, because I turned around and I asked him, I said, are you talking to me? Are you talking to me?
That might have been. That sounds familiar.
All right, Chrissy, I can hear you groaning over there. Oh, no, you didn't.
Charlie, you need a warning. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, you didn't. Why, you talking to me?
So Jay-Z had agreed to make this song. De Niro was calling him and calling him, trying to, you know, get an update of what was going on, and Jay-Z just pretty much stopped responding to him. So it's just that I don't know what it is. Jay-Z just has a problem with Robert De Niro.
I hope Bob doesn't have hard feelings about it.
Well, it's weird too because Jay-Z mentioned De Niro in his Empire State of Mind.
Oh, that's right.
Song. Yeah, he's like, yeah, I'm out that Brooklyn. Now I'm down in Tribeca right next to De Niro, but I'll be hood forever. So, you know, you'd think with that shout out in his song that he and De Niro would be like best buddies, but apparently they're not.
Well, hopefully De Niro will then find some up-and-coming star to do something for the Tribeca Film Festival.
I'm sure there's no shortage of
I'm sure there's no shortage stars. Of people. And if he doesn't want to do the job, there's plenty of people that can do something.
Yeah, just check
really
out YouTube
cool.
or something.
Yeah.
Well, there's a few people that are coming up and, you know, they all could use a little help sometimes when they're recording. And there's this woman that just does an amazing thing.
Right. And I was just amazed with this story. Anyone familiar with autotune knows that the robotic-sounding voice modulation is a big controversy in music. Singers like T-Pain and Kanye West have been criticized for using it, even while web shows like Autotune the News. Have you seen this, Jerry?
I love that, yeah.
Pretty funny stuff, yeah. Have become massive hits because of the process. So with a ton of autotune singing recently, there's nothing like that of Emma Robinson. This is who you're talking about, Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
She's a St. Petersburg, Florida high school junior who seems to be able to sing an auto-tune with no computer software helping her out.
I actually saw this not knowing it was her. It was something I saw on the internet. It was like one of those links, like, this girl sounds like she sings in auto-tune. I saw it a couple of days ago, and I was amazed.
Yeah, huh. I heard it too.
You know, yeah, it was on Reddit. That's where I saw it.
Yeah, Reddit. Well, and I guess her boyfriend was the one who posted it without her knowing. But it became a huge hit. You know, it went from, she had 600 subscribers, and then it jumped up to over 7,000, which, you know, I mean, we talk about some things in the millions and stuff like that, so it isn't maybe, you know, as big as some other things. But still, it's a pretty good climb, and she's been getting a lot of attention. And, you know, with this kind of talent, it seems like stardom is in her future. So we'll see. We'll wait and see what happens.
You know what? That's great. And I'm really, I'm with you guys, because I heard her do it. And I actually saw her do it on a video. And that's great that she can do that kind of thing. It's amazing. Autotune just blows my mind. But you know what? There's just so many songs out there.
There are.
That were not auto-tuned or were auto-tuned. But I don't know. Maya's got this great thing she's going to do for us about the summer hits.
Yeah. Well, everyone loves number one hits. I mean, that's why they're number one.
That's right.
They get popular. Or at least they're curious about who came out on top. And in the late 60s, one of the joys of Top 40 radio was that anything could happen and no one style of music necessarily dominated the charts. So I wanted to look specifically at the years 1967 and 68. And that was exactly one decade before I was born, actually.
I remember it.
Yeah. Do you? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I do.
Well, there were some really strong songs that have become iconic and are still really widely recognized today. Even though I wasn't born then, I know these songs and they mean a lot to me. So I picked out 5 songs that I wanted to take a look at. And, you know, we were talking about rap genius. For these kind of songs, I ended up getting curious about them, and I found some interesting factoids that I think we want to talk about.
Well, do tell.
Okay. So, of course, let's start with a big one. In 1965, Otis Redding, he originally wrote and released a song called Respect. But Aretha Franklin, she then put her own spin on it, and that was 2 years later, and she came up with R-E-S-P-E-C-T. And so it's really interesting.
Find out what it means to me.
That's right. It turns out that the stories told by the two versions have actually quite a different flavor, because Redding's version is kind of a plea from a desperate man who will give his woman anything she wants as long as he gets his due respect when he comes home. And actually, respect is like a euphemism.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for dinner.
Oh, I see.
Right. Yeah, for dinner. Oh, as long as he gets his dinner. Okay.
Well, obviously, Franklin, her version is really a declaration from a strong, confident woman who knows she has everything her man wants, and she never does him wrong and demands his true, true respect. Just R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take out T-C-T. So this one is going to make Cyrus happy. He shared with us the interesting latest news about Robbie Krieger. And that's actually who wrote most of the big hit Light My Fire.
That's right.
Oh, Doors. Yeah.
Yeah. It was his unfinished composition that the other band members of the Doors then they expanded on. And so they have credit for that song. And in 1967, when the Doors appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show, they were asked by the producer to change the line, "Girl, we couldn't get much higher," to a safer alternative, since the sponsors were really uncomfortable with a possible reference to drugs. And so the band agreed to do so, and they did a rehearsal with the amended lyrics. But during the live performance, Jim Morrison sang the original version. Yeah. And so Ed Sullivan, he didn't even shake Morrison's hand as they left the stage. And then the band was informed that they couldn't ever come on the show again. And so Morrison's response, he was like, "Well, we just did Sullivan."
In the 60s, man, there was a lot of that going on, because they did the same thing with the Stones. They wanted them to change the lyrics of Let's Spend the Night Together.
Let's Spend Some Time Together.
Stones did it. They did it to Let's Spend Some Time Together. You know, but you know, the Light My Fire is such a great song. It's I love it. And I love the version that Jose Feliciano did too. Mm. That, you know, he had a number one hit with that song too, as well as The Doors, the very same year.
That is so interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah, powerful song.
Let's hear a couple of samples of both of them.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar.
if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire.
I needed to include a song by the Beatles, and I had a number to choose from of number one hits in the 60s.
They had more than one number one hit?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And something I found really interesting is the Beatles really wanted to give the world a message, all you need is love. And that was the song that I decided I wanted to feature today. It was a number one hit in 1967, and it was written by John Lennon. And interestingly enough, in 1971, when asked whether songs like Give Peace a Chance and Power to the People were propaganda messages, his answer was, sure, so was All You Need Is Love. I'm a revolutionary artist. My art is dedicated to change.
All you need is love.
Another one, it might be a little less known, but after the Beatles tied up the charts for a week, Bobby Gentry, she rightfully took her spot with a song that got 8 Grammy nominations, Ode to Billy Joe.
I remember that song.
Yeah, it tells a really interesting story of a man who takes his life by jumping off the Tallahatchie Bridge. When it became a hit, the Rolling Stone magazine reported that it was only a 20-foot drop off the bridge, and the water was deep enough so you wouldn't get hurt. But of course, lots of people went to the bridge and jumped, which drove the local police nuts. It was like, oh no, they kept having to deal with it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I remember the song because it was a big hit song.
And then she said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today, Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Well, there's one that I can't forget. We talked about Dustin Hoffman earlier.
Uh-huh.
He starred in the 1967 film The Graduate, in which he is seduced by an older woman played by Anne Bancroft, who played Mrs. Robinson. And a song by that same name by Simon and Garfunkel was written for this movie. And, of course, it became a number one hit in 1968.
You're trying to seduce me, Mrs. Robinson.
Yeah. Well,
cuckoo-choo.
Ooh, yeah.
Cuckoo-choo. You know what? I got to – you know what? Since I was there in the 60s, I want to put this in real quick. Chris said cuckoo-choo, right? They asked Paul Simon why he had the chorus in there. You know, here's to you, Mrs. Robinson, cuckoo, cachoo, right? Uh-huh. He said because he thought it was going to be the catchphrase for the 60s because the Beatles had released that song.
The Walrus.
I Am the Walrus, cuckoo, yep. Cachoo.
Oh, so he thought yeah. he was going to be
So he thought if he did it and they did it, that was going to be like the new, be this thing. The
yeah,
thing.
That would be the new catchphrase, cuckoo, cachoo.
I can't hilarious. Imagine why they didn't catch on. I mean, really.
It's a little secret, just the Robinson's affair.
And actually, okay, you know there's one more song that I actually do want to include.
Okay.
Okay. Tighten Up, Archie Bell and the Drells. It's actually considered to be one of the first funk tracks to make a major impression on a pop audience. And it was later covered by, you know, such funk meisters as R.E.M. and Yola Tango. Something that I thought was really interesting. Here, it's a cool song, a funk track. And in the beginning of the song, Bell says, "We don't only sing, but we dance just as good as we want." And the line is actually often misheard and mistranscribed as "dance just as good as we walk." When asked to clarify this in an interview, Bell said, "We dance just as good as we want. Hell, we dance a lot better than we walk."
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I'm Archie Bell with the Drells of Houston, Texas. We don't only sing, but we dance just as good as we want. In Houston, we just started a new dance called the Tighten Up. This is the music we tighten up with.
So that is my collection of songs that I wanted to choose of those top 6 favorites from 1967 and 68.
That's a great, great list.
This list is, yeah, just fantastic. People got to be free. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, you know, there's just the Doors, Hello, I Love You. I mean, that's a.
Oh, and The Long and Winding Road. That's an awesome one, too. I mean, I see the Beatles. It's hard to
narrow it down because there were so many hits that just have stuck around as such important pieces of our culture almost. The time is up now. Do the time is up. Everybody can do it now. So get to it. Chrissy, do you ever just feel like you have to know something and you just don't know where to go?
Yeah, but when I don't know where to go, I go with Jerry Renfro. He's the guy in the know.
That's right. I'm Jerry Renfro, and I am the guy in the know. You ever have a headache? If you do, try some acetylsalicylic acid. Or if you get a cut on your finger, do you use an adhesive bandage? Probably not, because now we would refer to those as aspirin and a Band-Aid. But aspirin and Band-Aid are both trademark names of Bayer and Johnson, respectively. But they fall into a category of products that are known as genericized trademarks. These are products that essentially have become known by their trademark name because of their immense popularity, either because they were the first to market or they did it best. And so nobody asks for, do you have some acetylsalicylic acid? It's, hey, do you have any aspirin? But aspirin was actually a brand name.
Right.
So I was curious about that. And so I brought you some other items that have become known by their trademark name that now they just are. So a couple of these, I'm just going to read you what they are and see if you can guess what the brand name became.
Okay.
Cool. So the Goodrich Company, the company that make the tires, they patented an item that we would know as the zip fastener. Any guesses?
Ziploc bag?
No, it's the zipper.
Oh,
zipper is actually a trademark name.
I did not see that.
At the time, there were different companies that made zip fasteners for different products. They came out with theirs that they called the zipper, and it was immensely popular, and now everybody just calls it a zipper.
Of course.
Oh, right. Okay.
Exactly. This one should be kind of easy. The magnetic recording tape.
Cassette
tape? Yeah, video cassette. The videotape or video cassette was actually a trademark of the Ampex Corporation. But now, of course, everybody knows what a video – it's just a video cassette. But that was actually their trademark name. There were other companies that had different names for it. You know, during that whole, you know, Beta, VHS battle. Cellophane. Cellophane is actually a trademark name. It was trademarked by Inovia Films Limited of Europe. Here's another one. Moving staircase.
Escalator.
Escalator, yes. Escalator was a brand name of the Otis Elevator Company. But at the time, it was a moving staircase. I wonder if they called like the elevator the moving room. I couldn't find that. Now, in almost all of these cases, the products have been patent or trademark lawsuits, and they've all been deemed by the courts to be public use. So, you know, everybody knows it's a yo-yo. Everybody knows it's a zipper. You know, once it reaches that point where it's so in the public consciousness, the companies pretty much no longer can keep their trademark because that's just what it's called. And I'm going to – this one's kind of funny. Diacetylmorphine. Heroin. Heroin was a trade name. Whoa. Trademarked by the Bayer Company.
Oh, wow.
Cyrus, you had one too, didn't you?
Yeah, we're talking about Xerox.
Xerox, yes. Oh, to Xerox something. That's the name of the company that created the device. Interestingly enough, also Xerox invented the computer mouse, if you didn't know.
Oh.
They thought it was a huge failure and threw it out.
I did not know that.
Yep. Steve Jobs found it and made $1 billion with it.
I know this is that Apple Computer, Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs, Wozniak worked for Hewlett-Packard. He went to them and offered them the Apple computer.
And they turned him down.
And they turned him down. So that's why they started Apple on their own.
Yep. They're kicking themselves.
And now you know.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature.
The tallest thing for miles, I say, is incandescent blue.
Miss Amy's new album is a little different than the catchy kids songs she's known for, and she talked about it with our very own New York correspondent, Chrissy McIntyre.
Welcome to Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. I'm Chrissy McIntyre, and I'm speaking with Miss Amy Otey, who is a multi-nominated, Grammy-winning featured artist living here in the Garden State, New Jersey. Welcome, Miss Amy.
Hey, Chrissy. Big shout out. Yeah.
So, we've had you on the show before. You spoke with Charlie.
Absolutely, yeah.
You were talking about you do a lot of work with kids and kids rock and roll, like fitness with kids, things like that.
Yep, that's exactly right. Lots has happened since then. Gosh.
So you've had a little departure from the kids thing now, and you're kind of doing you have a new band.
I have a new band. Actually, it's very interesting. You could consider it me spreading my wings. How about that? Because I'm still doing the children's music and still making appearances with that. In fact, I have a new book coming out here this next month called Keep Kids Fit, Classroom Activity Break, which is in the real classrooms for ages pre-kindergarten through fifth grade. So that's going to be hitting the shelves in academia here this next month.
Great. So I'm glad you didn't abandon the fitness kid.
No, not at all. What I've done is literally just spread my wings, because the other huge project is that it's the same band that I create with Miss Amy Kids that I use on my tours and on my shows for that. I said, let's go a little further with this. Let me pull some stuff from archives. I've been writing some other new stuff. Yeah. So we put together this project called Off the Map with Miss Amy. And even though it's the same band, it's a completely different style of music than children's music. It's really Americana rock.
You're on your website, you kind of set a lofty goal for your band to venture beyond the norm and find what is out there. So what are you hoping to find? Have you found it yet?
What am I hoping to find? Here I'm going to pull a Kansas Dorothy on you and say, I already have. But we're trying to push the boundaries of our self as musicians, crafting wonderful music. And then we're also trying to reach out to gather new fans and people to listen, you know, and enjoy the music, to come along on the journey, because we do love making music so much.
Well, I think you do grab a lot of different audience members, because you don't have one specific style of music. You kind of really have a lot of different things. Is that deliberate? Is that something that you just...
That's interesting. It's a lot of different styles kind of mushed into one. However, you know, we belong in the Americana arena, because our roots are sort of in that area. There's a wide acceptance in that area, where you can have elements of bluegrass or country or sort of jazzy influences. All of those things sort of play into that. So when we were crafting the songs and working on the instrumentation, you know, we tried to go beyond some of the regular boundaries by adding horns. I mean, you'll begin to hear more and more of that happening in the Americana space. And then also, you know, breaking it down with the very last song on the CD is called Just an Ordinary Day, and that's got a lot of strings in it. It highlights my husband's piano skills, and he actually wrote that song, and I sang that one. So, we're trying to do a lot of, we're just doing what we like to do, and we're hoping that people love it as well. So
that's great. I love a band with a full sound. I just love when there's a horn section and the pianos and the strings.
Yeah.
I just love that.
Something you can sink your teeth into and listen to again and again. And every time you listen to it, you find something new. That's kind of what we're going for. Yeah.
So what is the songwriting process like for you?
It's very interesting. Because I work with children, I just feel constantly inspired. These little beings don't have filters. They're not going to really come from a space of ego or from anything that is really completely self-serving. They're curious, and they just point out things, and so many times the seeds for songs for me come that way. Also, it's, you know, really about balance and pulling in a personal journey. We've been doing this a while now, and it's kind of reflective. So when I say that this particular album, the Angels Riding Shotgun album, this debut one, is really a testimony to the journey of life, death, and rebirth. I feel like we all go through those cycles several times in our lives, you know, metaphorically, that we were constantly, reinventing ourselves or building on the skills that we have in our toolbox and moving on to the next thing. And that if we spend our lives sort of looking in the rearview mirror, we don't ever drive forward. So it's about knowing what's behind you and not necessarily having to turn around and revisit that all the time. So the songwriting process is very much like that for me. I mean, I try to draw on on seeds of inspiration that I hear and see around me, but at the same time also drawing on experience. And I like happy music. You know, I don't want, you know, the crying and dying, it doesn't do as much for me. I want something that's uplifting in a way and that feeds the soul. So that's part of where I am with the songwriting process, if that makes any sense.
So even if you're in a bad mood, you don't want the song to complement your mood. You want it to kind of bring you out of it.
Yeah, or just shift perspective maybe and give you some sort of grounding to kind of move forward. The a good example of that on the album is called It's the Kind of Feeling, and it's a story about a young family and the struggles that they go through. But at the same time, it's uplifting because it's about the love in the house, you know?
So do you write all the songs, or do you work with the band? Do they have input on them, or how does that work?
They have input sometimes on the instrumentation and what we're looking for, but we are, Alex and I co-write together.
Okay.
And so sometimes I'll come up with a seed of an idea and I'll write out the lyrics and things. And usually when I need tweaking on that, or when we need arranging, when we're talking about how what instruments we want to hear to make that full sound, mm-hmm. it's a process that we approach together. So it's a real team effort.
So when you say he does the instrumentation, so is Alex producing the albums for you as well?
Alex produced the album, yeah. And this particular album, we also worked with a producer down in Nashville to try to draw in some of their experts in sound, and we had such a great time with that. People like Pat Severs, who's with acoustic guitar. We also worked with Dale Herr, who did some electric guitar for us and some other things, and also the famous, the one and only Jim Horn, who plays tenor sax. He's played on more albums than you'd ever want to know. I mean, back from the 60s, this guy can just rip it. It's fantastic. Jeez. And then Bobby Bradley, who is part of the Bradley family, who have been in music and production for years and years, and they ran a place called The Barn down in Nashville, and they did they produced Coal Miner's Daughter. So we're drawing on a lot of, you know, experience from that. But also locally too, we have some friends and people we wanted to work with, including David Ivory at Ivory Studios, and he's been fantastic. He helped sort of coach us through a couple of things, and you know, we went in with what we thought the sound was, and then he worked through it with us to bring it up to that next level. And I do need to give a shout out to my Nashville producer, and that's Doc Holliday. He's the outlaw. So it's kind of been a group thing, but Alex and I engineer the engineer in the sense of putting the project together, and Alex is the primary producer of it.
So now,
which is a process.
So this new band now, the new iteration of your band, I should say.
Right.
Is this sort of your way of getting to the adult fitness angle? Just kind
of absolutely, really, because my kids grow up. I'm in a renewable business, and I catch the other end, too. I didn't think of it like that when we first started. We just knew we needed to express ourselves also in another way, and we had an opportunity then, as our kids had been growing older ourselves as a family.
Right.
So it was just exciting, and then when somebody said, oh, you're catching, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess we are.
So where are you going with this band? What are you guys, are you out on tour, or? Where are you going to be? Where can we
Well,
see you?
That's a very good question. Right now, we actually are gearing up for our CD release party, which is going to be at Havana in New Hope this coming weekend, and we're very excited about that. And we're hoping that things will happen where we get some more radio play. We're working on some bookings now. We'd love to take it on tour. You know, that opportunity has not presented itself in a way that matches what we need yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not out of the question. We're hoping to work towards that. But in addition to all of those two projects that are going on, I did go back down to Nashville to try to do sort of a demo for a solo project that I wanted to do. And I'm so excited about that I'm going to try to bump that to the next level, and I'm going to be setting up here very soon a crowdfunding opportunity for folks on Rocket Hub, and I'm hopefully going to be gathering a lot of fans on my team so that we can move forward and try to go one more step.
Now, what is the solo project?
It's going to be Miss Amy Goes to Nashville.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're going to write more of a country style?
Yeah, I think we're really kind of solidifying the sound. That was part of the fun and the experience of doing this first album as a band, is that we're trying to sort of massage that sound and really just hone in and target it, if that makes sense.
Okay. So you have a lot on your plate. You have the book coming out next month.
Yep.
You have the album coming out with
Right,
Off the
this Saturday,
Miss
yep.
Ote. And then you have a solo project.
Absolutely.
That you're working
on.
Well, so where can people go to find your music? And books.
Oh, people can go to offthemapband.com, and then they can also go to our Facebook page and like that. And our Facebook page for Off the Map is Off the Map with Miss Amy. But they can also go to missamy.tv and see what we're up to. Okay. And again, I still do performances for Miss Amy. I'm doing a lot of things at malls and local events. We're actually very excited. We are going to be working with the Special Olympics in 2014, which, as you
wow.
know, being a New Jerseyan, is coming to New Jersey.
Yay!
So, yay! So we have something very exciting coming up there next June. So sort of stay tuned, I guess,
wow.
on that.
That's fabulous. So, well, Miss Amy, it was so lovely chatting with you.
You Thank too. You. Thanks so much for your call.
To learn more about Miss Amy, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Matthew Shell works with many talented people like Selena Gomez on his new CD, Victorious. He told Charlie Stanton all about it in this interview.
Hey, welcome everybody to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today we are really, really pleased to bring you Matthew Shell from Washington, D.C. He's a great producer out of that area and all around the world, for as a matter of fact. And we're here to talk with him about his new collaboration with Arun Shenoy. So welcome, Matthew.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Great. Hey, you know what? I have a copy of Genesis, which is the new CD from you and Arun Shenoy, and it's really, really good stuff, you know. And as a matter of fact, it's so good. Let's hear a little bit of it right now. I put this, you know, for me, it's like it's soothing, but it's uplifting all at the same time, you know?
I appreciate that. I'm really glad you like it. We took a long time to really perfect it, so the fact that it connected with you is an honor.
Thanks. Oh, yeah, it definitely hasn't. It's connected with a lot of people so far. I've seen that, you know, so many great comments on the CD. You also have another CD out called Victoria, so tell us about that.
Yeah, we did an exclusive pre-release on SoundCloud where people can stream and listen to the album. And the official Amazon, iTunes, CD Baby release is coming right now. Yeah, it's a collaboration with all these wonderful artists that I've worked with, including Arun Shenoy, Kenny McNeil, Taurus Soul, and some other great artists. Just really cool to include instrumental pieces and then vocal songs back to back, so every other song is instrumental.
Well,
and it's just a good way of letting people enjoy jazz, but at the same time connecting with the average listener who enjoys vocalists. So,
yeah, you know, and I'm looking at your set list, and it's, you know, you go, you know, it's really all over the map. You have everywhere from Arun Shenoy, you know, to Selena Gomez. How does that work?
Well, what's really cool about the line of work I do as an engineer and producer is opportunities come and you just never know how they're going to come about. For instance, the Selena Gomez track is a remix that was specifically commissioned by Hollywood Records. What happened was Selena Gomez submitted her track to WPGC, who I'm friends with, and they turned it down because it was too pop music-y for their station. And so she said, well, is there anyone that can remix it, make it, you know, urban and edgy and something that will be played by WPGC 95.5? And so they called up DJ Flex, and I'm his go-to guy. So we decided to remix it, and we had it done the same day that Selena and Hollywood Records asked for the remix, and we got it finished 3 a.m. that night and submitted it. We thought it would take a while. They were going to master it or something like that, but Hollywood Records loved the mix on its own, and it was on the radio the next day. So just little things like that just happen, and just out of nowhere, and the next day you're on the radio, and by the end of the week it was number one on WPGC, the remix that we did, the live instrument remix. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, that song is, it's the way you guys remix it is just, I got to tell you, my daughters are big Selena Gomez fans, which is, you know, she's just, you know, really big star. But for somebody my age, I never, you know, really connect with her. But then I saw this and I listened to it and I was like, wow, this is pretty good, man. I did not see that coming, you know?
That's awesome. And when Flex and I heard the song, we just really liked what was done with it. And we thought, well, we can definitely just completely redo it with live instruments and make it something that our friends would enjoy. And that's all I really ever try to do with my music is if, you know, my fiance, my friends, people that I care about like what I do, that's all that matters. So it's all for me about just making music, you know, people around me will enjoy. And I'm very happy to say a lot of people would really like that vibe. Glad you liked it.
No, I liked it a lot. As a matter of fact, for our listening audience out around the world, let's hear a little bit of the remix of from Matthew Shell on Selena Gomez's Come and Get It. All right, let's hear some of that. Yeah, you know what? I can really hear the difference in that, and it's what an infectious song. And you know, hey, hats off to you guys. You did a great job.
Oh, thank you.
We know out of all the people and the different artists that we have here on the Victorious CD, is there anyone that just stood out to you? You're like, you know what? I like working with this guy. I need to work with him again.
Or gal
for that matter.
Arun Shenoy absolutely is an incredible talent, and I'm definitely going to be working with him again. It was just a real honor to do that track Genesis with him. And the process took over 6 months. Like, we were just really, really working hard at it. So the fact that it came out the way it did is a real blessing, you know?
Yeah, Arun, his last CD, the one that he was nominated for the Grammys, Rumble Doodle, great CD.
Oh, it's incredible. It's my favorite flamenco album I've ever heard.
You know, the music was so good. I told Arun that I wasn't sure if I liked the music better than the artwork, because his wife did the incredible artwork on there. I was like, dang.
Oh, yeah, she did her thing. But to answer your question, I mean, I'll just go down the list of the artists involved. Arun Shenoy, Kenny McNeil, who's a vocal artist, Von Stefanian, who's a pianist. I've done so many songs with him. He's incredible. Both him and Kenny. I think I did about 20 songs with Kenny on other projects and at least 10 songs with Vaughn. So those are like my go-to guys. So that's why I wanted to feature them on the very next song. This guy named Tor Soul from Atlanta. He's pretty incredible. And I really love what we did on the track Highest Praise. I think that was the first song we did together. And he just did an amazing job writing and coming up with the vocals, and then we did put that one together, and it just came together really fast. So a lot of these songs on this album took forever to make, but that one and the Selena Gomez remix were pretty quick.
Well, let me ask you a question, Matthew. How do you become a music producer? What inspired you, other than we know you love music?
I guess the quick answer to that is I grew up with a musical family, but they didn't necessarily encourage music. Like, they allowed me to pursue my passion, but I was always encouraged to study, be really proficient at school, and engage in sports and physical activities. And I think it's because my mom was a concert pianist. My dad was in the Navy, played trombone, and they saw how hard the music industry was. They didn't really encourage it, but I just pursued it on my own and really loved it and studied and even though I took business in college, I took music courses, and I went to Omega Studios and studied sound engineering right after college. So it was a passion, and I excelled at it. So I knew I could do something with it. The fact that every time I let people hear my music, they're really impressed. And, you know, you can tell if someone's just saying, oh, that's good, or they're like, man, where did this come from? You know, like, you can tell
the difference.
And it's kind of like your calling or your destiny. You can kind of sense it if you're perceptive at people's reactions. And I just know that, you know, the harder I work, the more it'll pay off. So far, so good.
Well, you've worked with a lot of people, you know, and just a lot of incredible artists. You know, I'm sure you have like some sort of a wish list, as to, you know, to coin a phrase. I mean, who would you like to work with that you haven't worked with yet?
If I had to narrow it down to one person, it would be Paul McCartney. I don't know. It's really hard. A lot of really talented.
Right. You know what? That's interesting to say Paul McCartney, because, you know, he's of course known as, you know, from the Beatles and his own stuff and, you know, rock and roll. But I heard an oratorio that he did. He is quite a classical musician.
Oh, he's amazing.
You know, I did not even know that.
He's no joke. I mean, I knew he was good just from the bass lines and the creativity back in the day, but I've heard some of his more eclectic recordings that might not have been as mainstream, and yeah, he's the truth. Paul McCartney's no joke. And he's really creative vocally. He was on Michael Jackson's first two solo albums. Just that alone just shows like how he can work with anybody in any style of music. So yeah, he's definitely a legend.
So before we let you go, Matthew, first of all, I wanted to tell you it's been such an honor to speak with you. And is there anybody out there that you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to my fiance Tara. I love her, and she's been very supportive of my very hectic and busy work schedule. And just want to let her know I love her and give that shout out. Also, thankful to God for my family, my parents, and everyone who supported me over the years. So, thank you again for this opportunity to talk with you and this interview. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And that's Matthew Schell. And be sure to go to mtsmusic.net. And check out the latest editions, and go to SoundCloud. I strongly recommend everybody go to SoundCloud and listen to Victorious. You'll just love the experience. Okay, thanks so much, Matthew.
To learn more about Matthew Schell, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Well, you ain't so big. You know, you're just tall, that's all. Man, working around the clock. I want a little drink of water, but you won't let bigger stop, big boss man. Now can't you hear me when I call?
Bossy Pants, a New York Times bestseller. Before Liz Lemon, before Weekend Update, and before Sarah Palin, Tina Fey was just a young girl with a dream. A recurring stress dream that she was being chased through a local airport by her middle school gym teacher. She also had a dream that one day she would be a comedian on television. She has seen both of those dreams come true. At last, Tina Fey's story can be told. From her youthful days as a vicious nerd, to her tour of duty on Saturday Night Live, to her passionately half-hearted pursuit of physical beauty. From her life as a mother, eating things off the floor, to a one-sided college romance, to her nearly fatal honeymoon, Tina Fey reveals all and proves what we have all suspected. You're no one until someone calls you bossy.
When did you first know you were a woman? When I was writing the movie Mean Girls, which hopefully is playing on TBS right now, I went to a workshop taught by Rosalind Wiseman as part of my research. Rosalind wrote the nonfiction book Queen Bees and Wannabes that Mean Girls was based on, and she conducted a lot of self-esteem and bullying workshops with women and girls around the country. She did this particular exercise in a hotel ballroom in Washington, D.C. with about 200 grown women, asking them to write down the moment they first knew they were a woman. Meaning, when did you first feel like a grown woman and not a girl? We wrote down our answers and shared them, first in pairs, then in larger groups. The group of women was racially and economically diverse, but the answers had a very similar theme.
Almost everyone first realized they were becoming a grown woman when some dude did something nasty to them. I was walking home from ballet and a guy in a car yelled, "Lick me." I was babysitting my younger cousins when a guy drove by and yelled, "Nice ass." There were pretty much zero examples like, "I first knew I was a woman when my mother and father took me out to dinner to celebrate my success on the debate team." It was mostly men yelling from cars. Are they a patrol sent out to let girls know they've crossed into puberty? If so, it's working. I experienced car creepery at 13. I was walking home from middle school past a place called the World's Largest Aquarium, which legally, I don't know how they could call it that because it was obviously an average-sized aquarium. Maybe I should start referring to myself as the world's tallest man, see how that goes. Anyway, I was walking home alone from school and I was wearing a dress. A dude drove by and yelled, "Nice tits!" Embarrassed and enraged, I screamed after him, "Suck my—" Sure, it didn't make any sense, but at least I didn't hold in my anger. Thankfully, blessedly, yelling "suck my d***" is not the moment I really associate with entering womanhood. For me, it was when I bought a white denim suit at the Springfield Mall. I bought it with my own money under the advisement of my cool friend Sandy. I wore it to Senior Awards Night 1988, where it blew people's minds as I accepted the Sunday School scholarship. Turned up collar, the jacket that zipped all the way down the front into a nice fitted shape, the white denim that made my untanned skin look like a color. Just once, I'd like to find an Oscars or Emmy dress as rad as that suit. Check the PDF. That suit's gonna blow your mind.
A spiky blend of humor, introspection, critical thinking, and Nora Ephronisms for a new generation. The New York Times. Tina Fey is a wildly popular actress and comedian best known for her involvement with Saturday Night Live. She made history there by becoming the show's first female head writer. Tina lives in Manhattan, where she is the third funniest person in her household, after her husband and five-year-old daughter. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Wake up the dawn and ask her why. Dream a dream, she never dies. Wipe that tear away now from your eye. Slowly walking down the hall, faster than a cannonball.
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is a Just Imagine It, Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio, Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook, and remember to get behind me.
Now stay there.